You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
If you're watching on Peacock, you'll notice that we had the bagpipes here again. New Haven County Emerald Society, pipes and drums. So my thanks to those guys. They usually stop by every St. Patrick's Day. I still go back to that time when McLovin wanted to know what was under the kilts. And I said, there's only one way to find out, McLovin. So I made McLovin lie down on the floor at the old man cave. And all the bagpipers came by and they stepped over McLovin. And McLovin realized that there was low-hanging fruit. Yes, McLovin.
So one of the guys said hi to me. And I kind of like didn't recognize him. He's like, oh, maybe if I lifted my kilt, you would recognize me.
All right, Paul, you had this question here. The QB quiz, how many NFL teams have quarterbacks on their roster that have combined for a Super Bowl MVP and four Pro Bowl appearances? The combined word leads me to believe Nick Foles and Andy Dalton, your Chicago Bears.
There are three total teams. The Chicago Bears are one of them, with Nick Foles, one Pro Bowl for Nick Foles, and one Super Bowl MVP. Three Pro Bowls for Andy Dalton. Should have been four, according to McLovin.
Tom Brady.
Correct.
Aaron Rodgers Jr. the third.
Correct. That's it.
So, Ben was not. That's right. He didn't win the MVP.
It was Antonio Holmes. You had no idea at the time.
He should have won the MVP.
Combined, the Bears are set at the quarterback position.
Yes, they are.
Nick Foles made a Pro Bowl? I don't remember that at all.
The year with the passing offense, Chip Kelly.
Yeah, but Chip Kelly.
Yeah, I know, but he kind of came on late. He had all his touchdowns in one game in that year.
Well, no, that's not true.
He had like nine against the Raiders. Remember that game? That was a faux season for Nick.
Faux season. Tom Waddle, former Bears wide receiver, co-host of Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000 in Chicago. And Tom joins us now. How is morale in Chicago, Tom?
Very low. It sucks. Like, we were on the air, Dan. I think it was 4 o'clock Central Time when the news came. I laughed. I mean, I think it was full belly laugh. And it was one of those kind of nervous, but hey, I expected this effing decision to happen. But yeah, we got it. We had 2 hours of people hot as the day is long that just, I can't understand it myself. So I understood why they were upset.
All right. Take me back to when Russell's agent through Adam Schefter says, here's the four teams. If Seattle happens to trade us, what was that day like in Chicago when you realized you were on the wish list?
Well, my first response was why? Like, why are we on that list? Like, whatever Russ is upset with in Seattle, there's not enough around him. They don't protect him well enough. Whatever the complaint was, it was like, Russ, that ain't going to get any better here in Chicago. Have you watched Bears football lately? But no, I mean, there was an enormous sugar high for sure that I don't know if you know this, Dan, but we're kind of in a quarterback drought here in Chicago. It's lasted several decades, but like when Russell Wilson, one of the top five quarterbacks in the league over the last decade, puts you on his wish list, like this city didn't know how to respond. Like I'm a realist in a lot of ways, kind of shaped by my childhood and my inability to run fast or do anything athletic. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had a pretty low expectation level for things, but even I was kind of intrigued and hopeful. Thought it was a long shot, but when Russ puts us on his list, I think everyone in this town had the thought that finally our long-wanted and needed franchise quarterback was about to be delivered to us.
But is there part of you that wishes that he didn't put Chicago on that list?
To raise expectations and then to be cut off at the knees? Yeah, I think you could make that statement. Look, like I said, my childhood was really kind of affected. When I think it was like 7 or 8 years old, I grew up in Cincinnati, and all I wanted for Christmas one year was an Archie Griffin jersey. I think I got a Super Toe. And Super Toes are cool, but I wanted an Archie Griffin jersey. And honestly, from that point forward, I think I kind of just, I've been a person that set the bar at a very reasonable level. And when Russ puts us on the list, it was like going back to that Christmas morning thinking I'm getting an Archie Griffin jersey and I get a Super Toe. Like, no offense to Andy Dalton. He's had a nice career. He's been to the postseason 5 times. He's had 3 trips to the Super Toe, or Pro Bowl, but that's a Super Toe. So, look, yeah, I think you can make the case that that it raised expectation levels to a lofty spot that really, in a lot of ways, you know, we probably, if we looked at it a little closer, weren't reasonable. I don't know, though, kind of if I circle back, like every now and again, it's fun to dream, especially where we've been with the quarterback position. So now I'm going to reverse my answer and say, no, I'm glad he put us on his list.
Would you rather have Mitchell Trubisky or Andy Dalton?
At this point, I'd rather have Andy Dalton. And look, my rationale is that the coach lost complete confidence in the quarterback a while ago. I don't even know if Matt ever had confidence in Mitch. Like, Mitch was drafted in 2017, and we're not going to relitigate what Ryan Pace did wrong there. It's quite obvious. But I thought that Matt never showed that he truly trusted Mitch. I don't think he felt Mitch fit his system. And I think that was on full display, especially at the end of last year. Nick Foles gets hurt. Mitch comes back. They totally tailor the offense to Mitch's strengths. They kind of scaled things back. They cut the field in half. And it's what Matt should have done. I mean, I think Matt deserves some of the criticism for Mitch's lack of consistent performance. But ultimately, he's a professional quarterback. And quite frankly, I just don't think he was good enough. But the moral of the story really for me is that if you watch how plays were called against the Saints in the postseason and the Green Bay Packers in the final game of the season, like, we could sit around and talk about how that offense was clicking and scoring 40 against a bad Texans defense or a bad Jags defense. But the truth is when you step up in class and you've modified your offense and you don't trust your quarterback to do anything, you're not going to beat the better team. So, like, Matt lost faith in Mitch. And once that happens, you got to move on. And I think the Rams are the best example of that. Sean McVay lost faith in Jared Goff as their quarterback. And what did Sean McVay do? He decided, look, we appreciate your participation and the effort, all that you did for us, but this isn't going to work. And he traded for Matthew Stafford. So that, to me, is kind of the best example that kind of defines my point for this. So, Mitch will be in the league for a decade. Great kid, hard worker, teammates like him. Struggles in my mind to play the position from the pocket. And, like, I just think Matt couldn't coexist with him any longer. Not because he didn't like him as a kid, but because he didn't trust him.
Are the Bears out of the quarterback market?
I think what I was told by this signing basically was is they swung and missed with Russ. They tried to complete the Hail Mary. It was incomplete. I think they're going to try to move up in the first round and grab one of these guys. They were in North Dakota looking at Trey Lance. I think they'll try to find a way to get one of these quarterbacks and then kind of reset the clock for both Ryan Pace and Matt running this program here in Chicago. Look, I think Ryan Pace is in, it's in his DNA to think big. So does it mean he's still not going to try to make a trade for someone? Probably not. But at this point, like, I was an advocate. If you can't get Russ and you can't get Watson, and Watson really was never an option, and Russ I thought was a long shot, my advice to them, had they called me, which they don't, would have been to just do nothing. You've got Andy Dalton on your roster. It's Nick Foles. Like, it's a bridge to nowhere. It's a bridge to mediocrity. It's a bridge to 8-8. So why not save the $10 million and try to fill some holes in other areas and try to fix your team in different ways? Keep your powder dry. And keep your draft picks. That's what I would have advised them to do. So I thought it was really an unnecessary decision to sign Andy. But I wouldn't rule out Ryan still going to the plate and trying to swing and hit the ball out.
Keep your head up, okay?
I can't.
Why not?
I mean, listen, this is living in this town, this team's in my blood. Like, you've got your jersey, it's got your face on it. I got a jersey that still, despite what they've done at the quarterback position, mine says Chicago Bears. They're in my heart. They're in my blood, Dan. And when you can't get the quarterback position right over the course of 90 years, it stings.
Could you ever see Jim Harbaugh coaching the Bears if there was a coaching change?
I like, that's a really tough question for me to answer, to be honest with you, because I have such a great feeling in my body for Jim and who he was. Like, there aren't many guys in the league back in the early 90s and late 80s that would have trusted me and thrown the ball to me, and Jim did. And he was such a great competitor on the field, and I loved him as in the way he approached the game. With that said, like, and his NFL resume is great. If you go back and look what he did in San Francisco, but like, what have they struggled with in Michigan to find the quarterback? what are we doing here in Chicago? We're trying to find a quarterback. Like,
forget I brought it up, Tom. Like, forget I brought it up. Forget.
Yeah,
it.
I yeah. mean, like,
it's my
like,
bad.
It makes me feel bad. Like, I mean, keep kicking me, Dan.
My bad. Hey, spring training. White Sox going to be good this year.
Yeah, and actually, they're on our station, the ESPN 1000. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I got that to look forward to.
Yeah. I'd start drinking early on St. Patty's Day.
Oh, Dan, it's the day that ends in a Y. I'm going to have one as soon as we're done.
Thank you, bud. Good to talk to you. Tell Sylvie we said hello.
I will. Thanks, Dan.
That's Tom Waddle. Paulie, if you want to start drinking today, you can start early if you want.
Never had one during the show before.
Yeah, if you want to.
All right.
Yeah. This program brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. They go far beyond, from their customization options, cutting-edge tech, to their five-star sales service and financial support crew. Mercedes-Benz Vans, built, equipped, engineered to be ready for anything. So go the extra mile. Take the all-important first step into an authorized dealership today. Did we settle on a poll question, McLevin?
We did not. I was going to ask Paulie something like, is this a good day for Bears fans? But it's so obviously no. So how do you gauge how bad a day it was?
Wait. So you were going to ask, is this a good day?
Normally, when a quarterback signs somewhere, a veteran quarterback, we say, are you happy about the signing?
If you ask Washington football team fans, hey, good day, you got Ryan Fitzpatrick?
At least you get a moderate or no comment. The Bears are 100%. This is the worst day that ever happened to us. I don't think I didn't see anybody in Washington complaining about Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Well, look at what they've had. I mean, Alex Smith coming back at age 36. They had Dwayne Haskins. They somehow find Taylor Heineke.
Right. I mean, Chicago is the same way, but you're right. They had no expectation. It was a stupid expectation of Russ Wilson that killed everything.
I understand that. Here's one thing that, you know, nobody has factored. There's two things that people refuse to factor in with Russell Wilson. First of all, if he goes to a new team, he's going to want to be paid. And he's going to want to be paid probably just under Patrick Mahomes. I'm going to lose draft picks, maybe a player or two, a starter or two, and I'm going to lose, you know, room on my salary cap. Here's the other part that nobody is talking about. Russell Wilson hasn't demanded a trade. Deshaun Watson has. Russell just said, I want action. I want to have input, and I want something to happen. If this doesn't happen, and look, you want to trade me, then these are the four teams. Deshaun Watson is demanding a trade. These are two different scenarios here. Until Russ says, I want to be traded, like, then it starts to heat up a little bit. Russ basically said, look, you guys don't want to let me have input here. You want to trade me? Then here are the four teams. But I still want to stay. If he says, look, I don't want to stay, now it's different. And he's going to have to expand, you know, the wish list. But he hasn't demanded a trade yet. And Seattle hasn't done anything in free agency yet. Those are the two things I'm waiting for. Is Seattle going to do something? And if they don't, does Russell Wilson demand a trade? Yes, Eden.
I think people are grossly overreacting to the Bears and Russell Wilson. And I think this could actually be a great day for the Bears.
Because they don't have to give up all of this draft capital, pay all this money, and get a Hall of Fame quarterback?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's weird. It's still, you're getting a Hall of Fame quarterback, but he's also at the same time the same quarterback who in like year 10 of his career, the storyline is still let Russ cook. When will Pete Carroll allow him to throw the ball? You know what I mean? Like, he's 10 years into his career, and his head coach, who's been there the entire time, still won't let him throw. And that's the guy who's going to save the Bears? I mean, I love Russell Wilson. He's awesome. He's great. But let's not act like, yeah, he was going to be the guy that was going to fix everything there.
Seton O'Connor.
Against the grain.
Yes, absolutely. It's like they're letting him cook on an easy bake oven. You know, it's not really a real meal.
I mean, that was just last year, wasn't it? Like, hey, yeah, when are they going to let him throw the ball, huh?
Yeah.
10 years he's been doing this.
First half of the season, let Russ cook. He was cooking. Then all of a sudden, they turned off the burners there. Russ didn't know it. He was still cooking. It just, there was no heat underneath the skillet. Yes, Paul.
If you go back with the Bears, with the Dalton thing, you know, Andy Dalton's made three Pro Bowls. He's been a good above average quarterback in the league, but that was a few years ago. In 2008, the Bears got Jay Cutler of Denver. Cutler was 25 years old. He was coming off his first Pro Bowl season. That was insanity for the Bears. That's what, you know, in apples and oranges to Russell Wilson. When you look at Cutler now, you don't think that. But if you remember, we were on the air that day when the Bears obtained Jay Cutler, and Bears fans were out of their mind. We don't get young, great quarterbacks. Mm. And it didn't really work out.
No. You gave up a lot, too,
yep,
to get him. All right, we'll take a break. We got our play of the day coming up next year on the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More phone calls coming up. Juwan Howard, Michigan Wolverines, will join us coming up in an hour from now. Our interview with Rick Pitino brought to you by Capital One. What's in your wallet? Coach joins us now. Coach, congratulations. If I would have told you when you were in Greece that you were going to eventually come back to the States and take a team to the NCAA tournament, what would you have told me?
It would be possible. I probably would never have figured out it was going to be Iona. I was really, really happy in Greece and things were going well. So I wasn't really thinking about going there until the president and the athletic director flew to Madrid.
How do you explain what has happened, let's say, in the last 3 years? If somebody didn't know, just the Cliff Notes version, how would you explain your life in the last 3 years of what has happened and where, you know, how you got to where you are today?
Well, there's so many great things that happened in a span of 40 years of coaching, but it is a roller coaster, and my roller coaster went extremely high. It would be like the cyclone at the old Coney Island, and it's extremely high, and then it got extremely low. But I think if you pick yourself up and not that I didn't do that, but for about a year and a half, I was extremely bitter at certain people, and now I'm not bitter at anyone. So it's, you move on, you pick yourself up, and you try to make something special where you're at.
How do you get rid of the bitterness?
I get rid of it by stop pointing fingers, stop blaming people that weren't Louisville people on the board of trustees. I was blaming disloyal assistants, how could they ever do such a thing? And then in the end, I just took responsibility by looking in the mirror. I said, hey, you hired those people. It's your fault. And then the bitterness toward the other people, and said, I finally came to the conclusion and said, if this happened and I was on the board of trustees, I'd fire myself as well. So you just get down to reality and you speak the truth. It's the only way you get better is to own up and not make excuses. And I just finally owned up. It took me way too long. I wish it would have happened sooner.
How low did you get?
I had an awesome job for 17 years, and we had it rolling. Three Final Fours, a championship. And so when all that's taken away from you and you're in Greece by yourself, you get pretty low. But the second year in Greece was so spectacular. That's when the bitterness dissipated, and I just had the most wonderful time, learned so much basketball that I didn't know in terms of different styles of play, met so many incredible people in Greece that I'm the national coach now. I'm still close with so many people. My agent over there has become one of my best friends. So in the end, you look back and say, hey, it was a new frontier, but it was really, really a special frontier.
Has your coaching style changed?
Just, you know what I learned EuroLeague basketball, they're not as talented as the NBA, but a lot of NBA players at the tail end of their career play over there. Dominic Wilkins played for the team I coached. Byron Scott played for the team I coached. Tony Delk. What happens is you have terrific offensive basketball. It would look like Princeton on steroids in terms of the passing, the ball reversal, the bounce passes, the movement. The shooting is great with bigger, better players than Princeton. And then the defense is not as good as the NBA, obviously. But then you travel down to Tel Aviv and Moscow and St. Petersburg and Germany, Milan, Barcelona, Madrid, Istanbul. Some were fantastic. Some I don't want to go back.
Where don't you want to go back to?
I don't want to get killed, so I'm not training.
So Moscow or Istanbul, you might not put on your passport again.
Moscow, I loved.
Oh,
absolutely
okay.
Loved. Was in the Red Square, and these people come up to you in their costumes and take pictures. It's all about money again, just no different than any other place, like 42nd Street. But the mall surrounding the Red Square is fantastic. Moscow, I loved. Very clean. Now, traffic in Moscow and Istanbul is L.A. times 5.
Where's the strangest place you were recognized?
Probably Moscow, because basketball's not that big there. It's hockey and soccer. And the guy the staff was having a beer at this place, and a guy came up to me and said, "I see you all the time. You're an actor." And I said, "Well, some people believe that." And I said, "No, I'm not an actor." I said, "I'm a basketball coach." He said, "That's where it is."
Wow. Wow, that's good. We're talking to Rick Pitino, the Iona head coach, as Iona won the MAC championship, and they got number 2 Alabama coming up Saturday at 4 Eastern. What are the analytics on three-pointers now, since you sort of ushered in this era, when you were at Providence? But where are we now, do you think?
I think Alabama is probably epitomizes where it has arrived. Because they totally, 40% of their shots are threes, then another 40% are at the rim, 18% they get fouled, and 2% is mid-range. They absolutely want to cut out the mid-range shot completely from their repertoire. So that's where it has arrived for Alabama. But what people don't recognize, what makes them so great, is they're also top three defensive team in the nation, adjusted defense. So they play fast, but they play awesome defense with great length. Now, if it was just a three-point shot at just getting to the rim with no mid-range game, they wouldn't be quite as good. But they were awesome. And in 87, when we started shooting more threes than everybody, I told my guys, well, if you make so many 10 threes a game and you give up 9, it's not a weapon. So I said, we've got to make 7-8 threes a game, but we've got to keep our opposition to 2 or 3 for it to really get the fruits of your labor.
And then what Loyola Marymount did with Paul Westhead. Was he taking what you started and then just kind of,
Well, Paul also beat everybody down the floor with and got a lot of layups, no question about it. Paul was a great offensive mind. The only difference is Loyola didn't play great defense. They were decent, but they didn't play great defense.
Okay.
And what makes not only Alabama play great defense, but they have great length, great athletes. They rotate terrific. So they're a legitimate team to win it all, and there's about 8 or 9 of them out there. None, I think, the likes of Gonzaga, but there's about 8 or 9 of them.
The protocols that you had to deal with, that's something new for everybody, but how wild was it when you're not quite sure if you're going to play a game or have a practice or how many players you're going to have?
Well, we probably were paused more than anybody in college basketball. We missed 55 days of practice, paused 4 different times. I didn't know, Dan, if we were going to play in our conference tournament because we swept Monmouth in 2 high-scoring games, and Isaiah Ross, our best player, had 31 points. That night he went on the computer to check out his Thursday test, and he had COVID. He played with COVID.
Oh, man.
He was asymptomatic. The whole team went back into pause. We came out, and 5 days later we had to play a game. And our AD and I said, "Is there any way you could get them ready in 5 days?" I said, "I'll try, but it's going to be difficult." And we went in double sessions. We went an hour and 20 minutes in the morning, an hour and 20 at night. And why only an hour 20? Because if you go any longer, you're going to pull a groin, pull a hamstring. So we got into, we're still not 100% in shape, but we're getting there. Another couple of weeks, and I think we'll be there.
I know that you're on record as saying you're going to retire at Iona, right?
Yep, 100%.
If Indiana called, would you listen to Indiana?
I've had a few calls from people about, and I'm not saying Indiana, about other situations, and I told them, look, I'm honored, I'm complimented, but I you see, Dan, when the president and the athletic director flew over to Iona, I tried to, because he was the president of Transylvania, a small school right next to the University of Kentucky. I tried to explain to him what went on at Louisville and how I had nothing to do, and he interrupted me, wouldn't let me go 10 seconds more, and said, Coach, we've already spoke to all Kentucky officials. We spoke to the Louisville AD. We spoke to seven players you coached at each school. That we have already done our homework. We wouldn't have flown 16 hours here if we didn't do our research. So don't even bring it up again. We want you to be our coach. When he said that, I wasn't sure I was going to take the job. I immediately knew in my mind. I was with my son, my nephew, and my niece and in Madrid. And I immediately knew I was taking that job. So I have no interest in any place, anywhere. Would I like to someday go back to the EuroLeague and coach there again? If Iona ran out, yes, I would. But outside of that, it's just retirement.
Okay. I'm recording this, you know.
I've been on record quite a bit, so it would be a waste of time for anybody even to pay me the compliment to have consideration, because your loyalty is an important. When you're 68, I think when you're 35, you're looking to move up the ladder. I'm not looking to get on top of that roller coaster anymore. I'm having a blast coaching young men that have the same ambitions that my Kentucky players had or my Providence players, Louisville, and they have the same ambitions, maybe a little bit lower. It's not the NBA. It's the Champions League over in Europe, but they have the same ambition. They have the same potential to get there, and I'm just flat out enjoying a small little Catholic school in New Rochelle, New York.
But are you managing? I mentioned coaching. Are you coaching different? Are you managing your team, running a program with what happened at Louisville? Do you look at the program differently, more hands-on with things?
You know, Dan, I've had 30 assistants move on to be head coaches, either players or assistants move on to be head coaches. Some of them, the big names in basketball. Some of them, Tubby Smith won a national championship. Billy Donovan's with the Bulls, and Jim O'Brien went to the Celtics, the Pacers, and the Sixers. So Frank Vogel was my student manager at Kentucky. I've had so many wonderful people that have gone on to great prosperity and success. Then I made a couple of hires that things were done behind my back. I trusted people, but I don't want to get paranoid with my staff right now. And yeah. Like one NCAA guy said, did you look at his computer? I said, well, first of all, sir, that's a felony. And second of all, no, I did not. And so I don't want to get paranoid and do that. But I'm certainly on top of every little thing, regardless whether it's Iona or Kentucky. You have to be that way today.
I think you should bring back the white suit.
Definitely. In New Rochelle, there's a lot of people walking downtown with white suits on, except they're probably in a different profession than coaching basketball.
Yeah, but you could be in the medical field.
Maybe Arthur Avenue and some of the gangsters.
Do you still have that white suit?
I do. I do. I wear it at Prime 112 in Miami.
Yeah, you could fit in there. Hey, good luck with Alabama. See what you created, these teams that shoot threes? Now you got to try to defend that. Good luck with that, Coach, and congratulations again.
Thanks, Dan. Good visiting with you.
That's Rick Pitino, the Iona head coach, and he's brought to you by Capital One. What's in your wallet? Hey, talked about a roller coaster ride. He was at the top. He was at the bottom. And then all of a sudden, you go to Greece. But, yeah, he needs to take responsibility for who he hired. Absolutely. His son, Richie, who just he got fired by Minnesota and now going to New Mexico State, he's the one who said, hey, will you stop pointing fingers because nobody is going to believe you. They have their mind made up on what happened and your responsibility. That's it. Whether he knew an assistant coach was paying a player $100,000 or what was going on in the room, New Mexico. Did I say New Mexico State? But, you know, he it comes back to the coach. Like it or not, it comes back to the coach. But taking responsibility allows you to move on. And I like that he says, look, I would have fired me too. And he did win his lawsuit. People don't, you know, once there is charges or something happens, somebody gets fired, I always say, go, how about we wait for due process? Just a little bit. But they fired him first, and he fought it. And, you know, they dropped the charges, but he still got fired. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Juwan Howard of Michigan will join us next hour here on the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. The Michigan head coach, Coach Howard, joining us on the program as they hook up with the winner of Mount St. Mary's and Texas Southern. That'll be Saturday at 3 Eastern. Coach, I know you're from Chicago. Do you care about the Chicago Bears quarterbacking situation now that Andy Dalton is there and you missed out on Russell Wilson?
Hey, what's up, Dan? First of all, I want to say thank you for inviting me on your show. To answer your question, yes, I do care about the Chicago Bears and what's happening with our quarterback situation. I'm the biggest Bears fan there is, and I'm following it closely. No offense to the quarterbacks that are there under contract, but the Russell Wilson situation sounds very, very interesting.
Now you got Andy Dalton instead of Russell Wilson. When are you guys going to get a quarter? You think you get a good quarterback in your lifetime, Juwan?
Well, we have a good quarterback. You know, Mitch is a good quarterback. Andy Dalton's a good quarterback. Nick Foles is a good quarterback. Nick Foles is a Super Bowl quarterback.
I'm talking about a great – a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Hall of Fame quarterback? You know, that's still to be, you know, determined. Russell, like I said, it sounds interesting. He's truly looking at a Hall of Fame, you know, Canton, Ohio appearance.
Do you practice at all with your team?
No. I don't practice. I don't play basketball, man. I let that go.
When's the last time you played? When's the last time you played?
I would say maybe 4 years ago when I was an assistant with the Miami Heat, and it was a summertime. And Hassan Whiteside was the only big, and we didn't have anyone to guard him, and we only had seven guys. So just all hands on deck, do whatever we can to help Hassan get a good workout. I played 4-on-4 with the guys, and I guarded Hassan Whiteside. Now, no offense to Hassan, and he may tell you a different story, but our team won, and I had a huge impact on the game. Huge.
Do you remember your stats from that game? You probably do, don't you?
Yeah, you know, you always remember your last game stats.
Do you remember your welcome to the NBA moment?
Yes, I do. I remember my first shot it got blocked by Dino Roger. I was going to a bag down crab dribble, and I'm getting ready to go into my move, and you know, Dino Rogers just sat on it. And I turned to give him a shoulder fake and try to raise and shoot it, and he blocked the shot. And I was like, wow. Welcome to the NBA, young fella.
Yeah, but Dino couldn't jump, though, Juwan.
And Juwan couldn't jump either. I make two of us.
What do your kids say when they see you play? Any of the highlights?
Well, they do say, like, okay, Dad, well, you was a bucket getter. Okay, you had a little talent. You had some skill. You know, they didn't get a chance to really watch me play until the end of my career, so they do not quite know the impact that I had on the NBA or in college. And, you know, luckily that there's some folks out there that are still saving some video where they're able to see it, because back then we had VCRs.
But the Fab Five gives you immortality, Juwan.
It helps. It helps. The Fab Five documentary helped a little bit, too. It gave me a little street cred.
How close was the Fab Five to not happening?
Very close.
Because you were kind of recruiting everybody, weren't you?
Correct. You know, if you go back to my senior in high school, and
No, I actually go back further than that. My junior year in high school, and Illinois was the front runner. And the University of Illinois, at that time, was Coach Lou Olson. And I used to always, every summer, go to team camp at the University of Illinois. And Jimmy Collins was the lead recruiter. So Illinois got into a situation with Bruce Pearl, who was an assistant with Iowa.
Yeah.
And there was a tape conversation with Deion Thomas, a recruit out of Chicago, Illinois area. And that situation sort of put a little damper on the plans for me to attend Illinois, because my senior year, I was waiting to see what happened with the NCAA and Illinois, if they were going to get any type of, you know, violations or whatever. And in November was the time that I was going to commit. And Michigan moved into being a front runner. And then when I recruited to the, well, when I committed to the University of Michigan, I started to recruit other players like Jimmy King. And I also started to recruit Chris Webber extremely hard. And I can't take credit for Ray Jackson. He was already committed to the University of Michigan. But I can truly take credit for Jimmy and Chris. And Chris did a lot of recruiting with Jalen.
And then, well, Chris was looking at Duke, wasn't he?
Chris was looking at Duke and Michigan State.
Izzo said that that's the recruit that made him cry. Like, he lost Webber, and he said that that's the one that hurt him.
Yeah.
Well, now you know, as a coach, where you're recruiting and somebody can break your heart.
Yeah, but I haven't cried yet.
it's early, though. It's
like I said, yet. Yeah, the key word, I said yet.
If I told you 3 years ago your team would be a number one seed, you'd be coaching Michigan, be a number one seed, what would you have said?
Well, I would say, Dan, now we got a lot of work to do. You know, we got to take one game at a time.
But you had a hard time. You wanted to coach in the NBA. You and Patrick Ewing, you were kind of hoping to get a head coaching job. And then
that was the goal. As I was as an assistant with the Heat, the goal was developing, and which Eric Spoelstra did, and, you know, Pat Riley, David Fizdale, Keith Smart, Dan Craig, Chris Quinn, all those guys I was learning from, and they were helping me to develop, to become a head coach someday. And give a lot of credit to Spo. He really was grooming me to someday be a head coach in the NBA. And that time, it was like the last 2 years before I took the Michigan job. You know, I went on recruiting. Not recruiting, I'm sorry, interviews, to interview for head jobs with the NBA team. But I was always asked the question from family and friends, if I ever wanted to coach college, would I? And my answer was always Michigan. If that job ever came available, that's the only school I would coach. Now, you know, it's a dream job. My dream came true.
Still have a goal to coach in the NBA?
I never even thought about that. That's the past now.
Really?
I'm so locked in to Michigan.
Good.
I love this place. Yeah, I'm enjoying my experience. I'm growing each and every day, growing with my staff to become a better coach.
I tune in to the game against Maryland, and that's when the bench is cleared. I had no idea what happened there. Didn't know until a few minutes after there. Have you watched that video of what happened?
Oh, yeah, I watched the video because I actually wanted to watch it right after I addressed the team, apologized to the team, and I wanted to go back and see, like, how it all happened. And I knew how it happened, but
it's like an out-of-body experience?
Yeah, I mean, I was totally stunned, and I was also disappointed in how I reacted, because as the leader of this team, you know, I felt that I should have did a better job of controlling my emotions.
Well, as you said, look, it's take your notes. It's in the past. I don't want to talk about this anymore with, you know, your conversation with Coach Turgeon. But, you know, your team rallies around you, too, which is the most important part, because they pick you up. And, you know, same thing with Patrick Ewing. I mean, his team picked him up. You know, they went 4 in a row in the Big East. Have you talked to Ewing this year?
Yeah, I reached out to him right away when I saw that they won the Big East championship, which is very hard to do in a tough conference. And, you know, there were a lot of, you know, I would say these experts you know, picking Ewing team to really fall out or not even make it that far. And Coach stepped up, and his team, like you said, they rallied behind him. He prepared them, and they went out and competed. And they competed every game, and I'm so happy for him. So I hit him up right away, and he hit me right back. Because, you know, I don't know if you noticed or not, Dan, I played for Pat. He was an assistant coach with the Houston Rockets when Jeff Van Gundy was our head coach. And we had a staff of Thibodeau, also Steve Clifford, and Pat, which was a hell of a staff, all head coaches. And Jeff Van Gundy was the head coach. And Pat and I have a great relationship.
What if I said that coaches have to play in the NCAA tournament? So you got to eat. Every team's coach has to play like 5 minutes. Like how would Michigan do against some of the other teams that you might be facing?
Well, I know we're on radio, and I have to be very careful with my words, but this is the competitor speaking here. I would just put it like this. We're not losing. We're not losing. And I have a lot of trust and belief in myself. And I still train. I still work out, but it's never basketball shape. But we're for competitors only. Anytime there's any coach that want to lace it up and play one-on-one, and I know Stackhouse, I know he's listening. You know, he's probably the only one that I think that will give me a little bit of competition because I know he's in great shape. He plays pretty much every day.
You're not worried about Bryce Drew?
Stop. Stop.
Mark Few, you're not worried about?
Too little.
What about Ewing?
Too slow. That's my guy, man.
That's good. Do your players ask you about your Michael Jordan moment? Do they have they asked you about that? And what is your Michael Jordan moment?
Yeah, I've gotten a question just about a month ago after practice. Terrence Williams Jr. asked me a Michael Jordan question about the time playing in the Dome when Jordan was filming the movie Space Jam. And they saw some footage where I was playing and we were playing shirts and skins. And they asked, about my relationship with Michael. And I talked about the brotherhood that we both share and how much I've learned from him in his work ethic and watching while Michael was shooting the movie. He still was training for NBA season. Talked about how we played that night, every night, 5 days a week, pickup versus some high level talented NBA ball players, all stars, Hall of Famers. You name it. That's all I gave him. You know, all the other stuff, man, I can't give him, man. You know, I'm from Chicago. You know, there's this famous word that they say, snitches get stitches.
But yeah, everybody has that moment where you go, oh, man, I'm guarding Jordan or Jordan, you know, he's going to say something to him. Like everybody had a Larry Bird moment that, you know, Bird would say something to people. But did you have that moment with Jordan where – you probably were in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Well, I recall the time when MJ was the president of the Washington Wizards. And I was a player on the Washington Wizards, and he practiced one day with us. He's done it more than once. But the first practice, I didn't know he was going to really practice. And, you know, he got out there, and he still had an impact on the game. Very effective out there, and he was talking some trash, doing the typical Michael thing, and he reminded us that he had beat us in the playoffs and swept us. I thought that was he hit below the belt. Michael knows how to hit below the belt. He knows how to push the right buttons.
Wait, was that the LeBradford Smith game?
No.
Okay.
No, that was later. That was the first round when it was the Bulls championship team. They won it that year. And on my team, it was myself, Weber, George Mirasan, Rod Strickland, and Cal Bercheny.
Respectable five.
Yeah. We were a young group. We were very young.
C. Webb tells great stories about Jordan. He said that they showed up at the Chicago Stadium and Mike's sitting you guys got off the bus?
Like I said, man, snitches get stitches, man. Some stories you just can't tell, man. You gotta let it go.
Come on. No,
Mike's, I'm not telling that story. Nope.
Mike's smoking a cigar, sitting on a Lamborghini, and then he's like, who's gonna guard me tonight? With some language attached to that, right?
Hey, I'll let Webb tell you that.
Hey, congrats on the season so far. A lot of fun. And I know you're not fully assembled there with your lineup, but good luck in the tournament.
Hey, Dan, I appreciate it, man. I see that cool shirt you have. So when you have time, you can just send me one of those T-shirts. Happy St. Patty's Day.
That's Happy Dan Patrick's Day.
That's dope.
Yeah. I'll send one out to you.
No doubt. Double X.
Double X. Happy Dan Patrick's Day. Good luck in the tournament. Thank you, Juwan. Great to talk to you.
Thank you always, man. Stay safe.